This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Borg, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. During the next hour, we're discussing reducing, reusing, and recycling. Who's doing a good job of managing waste and what's working? We'll hear about Des Moines' Curbit success, about the huge parking garage sale going on now in Iowa City, where some 20 tons of reusable items are up for sale. And from Cass County, how Iowa's only baling of waste is working. We're all becoming more aware of how we deal with what we don't need and the environmental effects of what we do with it. We're getting insight on The Exchange right after the NPR News. I'm Dean Borg, continuing The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. Today we're talking about the ever-present but ever-increasing challenge of how we dispose of what we consider to be trash. Some say trash, another man's treasure. We'll get to that in a little bit. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency estimates that 75% of what goes into the nation's landfills, and I said 75%, three-quarters of what we throw away, could either be recycled or otherwise diverted in some way. That's surprising. We're going to be talking with Tom Hayden, who directs the Curbit recycling program for the Des Moines Metro Waste Authority, and also with Jennifer Jordan in this first segment of The Exchange this noon. Jennifer is coordinating the Iowa City recycling program, and it's called Rummage in the Ramp right now. We're going to find out what that's all about. Tom? Good morning.
Yes.
Or good afternoon. We've just good passed afternoon. The noon hour. Yes. Is this a new program that you've got, Curbit in Des Moines?
Actually, we're in the 16th year, Dean. We started with the 18-gallon size rectangular container that you carried to the curb. And this last year, we went to the toters, the roll-off containers.
That's
what's
new. Up
to 96 gallons. Yes.
And was that a big step? I mean, that's something new for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a big step because before the sort took place in the household and then at the curb with the truck, and now this is a step where you have two things. It's very convenient for the consumer, and then you have to have a facility that can take the material and then separate it into goods that are recyclable and have a market for them.
Because you've passed on the, if you will, labor cost, which you had before, just the homeowner deciding what I put out to be recycled and separating it. You've put everything in one bin and say somebody else is going to separate it and we'll pay for it.
Right. At home now, I just rolled my two containers to the curb this morning, and we put our recycling container right by the door in the garage, and it's an easy sort, garbage or recycling, and a lot of things in the household are recyclable, so that's an easy decision, and it makes it very convenient.
You know, I gave that 75% of what goes into the nation's landfills could either be recycled or otherwise diverted. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I think if you go to this landfill site where it's being filled at our facility, you'll see a lot of paper and some things you're thinking could be fairly easily separated. And then there's material that could be recycled that sometimes is in a manner that's not so easily recycled. Yeah, but there's a whole lot of paper, wood, mm-hmm. and cardboard that's still going into landfills.
I'm going to give a number here for listeners to get involved, and I'm going to be talking soon, too, with Jennifer Jordan of the Iowa City Recycling Program and the project that they have going now on Rummage in the Ramp. But to get listeners involved, it's 1-866-780-9100. In fact, we have Marjorie on the line already from Windsor Heights in Des Moines. I'm going to put her on. Marjorie?
Thank you. I have gone to my city council meeting, and I got a partial explanation, but not a complete one. And I have made several phone calls. My question is about small batteries and I guess these light bulbs that I think you call LEDs. I have a few of these things sitting on my cupboard. I don't feel it is worth driving to Bon Durant with them from this distance because we don't have anything else to go out there right now, but I don't know where to put them. And there doesn't seem to be a bin or a place or some provision to put these things that they have said should not go.
Margie, I have your problem, and I think that maybe Tom Hayden has or Haddon has an answer.
Well, batteries, yeah, they could go to our regional collection center in Bond Rant. Also, alkaline batteries can be thrown away if they're residential garbage, but if you don't want to throw them away, we also have we've had four events in the western suburbs. We've already had, I believe, two of them, and if you look on our website, you'll see the other dates where you could bring those batteries with you to those sites. So that would be more convenient to you.
So I won't have to have somebody look on the website because I am legally blind.
Well, if you call and leave a message for me, we'll get you those dates. Just call Metro Waste Authority.
At what phone number?
244-0021.
214-244-0021.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marjorie,
right,
for calling. Tom, that brings up a point, though. You know, what she was asking about could very easily, she just could drop it into the wastebasket and goes out to the landfill. Is that a temptation that you've got to overcome, and how do you persuade people to not do that?
That's true, and it's because it's convenience is a lot of it. But really, we got to start looking upstream from the products, Dean, and how they're manufactured and make it easier for them to be recycled or deconstructed. Because in our society today, as you know, let's say a cell phone or some others, they become, in a matter of a couple of years, it's like they're no longer relevant. So you get the newer model and
sure. Or
for repairs, more costly than a new one. So it is a challenge, and that's what we have to be working on.
Yeah. We have another caller on the line. I'm just going to take that call. It's Daryl calling from Cedar Falls, and I think that he's lived in the Far East and has experienced something more than we have here. Go ahead, Daryl.
I was fortunate to have my eyes open to a Japanese way of recycling, which was mandatory. Of course, it has to be a way of life because of, you know, limited resources and space. But more impressive for the way they handled recycling was they did make wasteful packaging and sizes available. A lot of the things that I can buy, you know, just to the smallest sizes here, we can buy almost anything and ends up being just thrown. Also, they had the recycled bags. Trash bags had to be in clear plastic, so they could clear plastic bags had to be used for recycling, so they could see what was in it. And more than once I had bags brought back to my house if I hadn't separated it correctly.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Daryl. And Tom, that brings up something. Is America ready for such a structured program like that?
Some areas are. Some communities have taken on that type of approach. But America as a whole, we're not quite there yet. But we need to be looking at our materials that we throw away as a resource and make some decisions beforehand. And packaging, I agree, and we package things to the extreme here, and we need to reduce that. Products need to be more easily recycled, and better yet, you need to reduce what you even throw away.
Let me ask about your Curb It program again and the step that you've taken now to you do the sorting, or you hire people to do the sorting. You said it was a big step for you, but what persuaded you to do that?
We were looking at the current system, which did a good job of educating. I mean, the system we did have, which was very good for people learning about recycling, but we're seeing that the participation levels weren't what we wanted them to be. And so everywhere we went to, we kept saying, you know, make it convenient for people to recycle. Mm-hmm. So that's the step we took. And that's why also another very important component was you had to have a place that was automated to take this material and, again, separate it into a commodity. So that's, like you said, instead of doing it in the house at the curb, now they do it in a facility.
But Tom, did it achieve what you thought it would, that is, have more people gotten into the program now? And is this an opt-in program?
Yes. About 72% of the people in the metro area are using this program, and it's every 2 weeks. And we've increased 3,000 tons of what is recycled per year since last year. So area was doing a good job, we're doing a better job. And with recycling, it's continuous education with people to know what can be recycled and what can't. That's another challenge.
One more question before I turn to Jennifer. Did you also increase the number of items, different items that you will accept now that you're doing the sorting?
Yeah, yes, we did. We have mixed paper, which is all your junk mail and any type of cardboard, newspapers, steel, aluminum, glass, and plastics, and clothes hangers. So we've increased, I think we've increased a little on some of the items as far as the paper, but basically it's plastic bottles and other things are still in the mix. It's the big difference, Dean, is if you can just open that lid and throw it in there. Before we had to put the paper separately, put your mixed paper in a bag, mm-hmm. and so on. So the biggest issue, again, is just being able to easily put it in the recycling container.
You have a Curb It is what you call your program. Jennifer
Correct.
Jordan in Iowa City calls what she's involved in right now Rummage in the Ramp. We certainly have the attractive names going here. Jennifer, what is Rummage in the Ramp?
Well, Dean, basically it's a city-sponsored garage sale that occurs always during the last week of July and the first couple of days of August, that the whole point of which is to keep stuff off the curbs in Iowa City and keep it out of the landfill.
And why at this time of the year?
The leases change over in Iowa City August 1st. So the key is really to encourage people, instead of leaving their stuff on the curb or piling their dumpster at their apartment 10 feet in the air, which you can start to see around town now, the point is really to get them to bring stuff to the ramp and deal with their waste responsibly.
And Iowa City being a transient community, a lot of leases are up at this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
How is it going?
It's going well. This is the fourth year we've done Rummage in the Ramp, and the last 2 days, today we're starting our third day actually about 15 minutes ago. So far we've made about $3,600. We've had about 350 donors come in with trucks full or a box full, depending on what they have to get rid of. And we've done about 450 sales. So it's going very well already this year.
Better than past years?
Pretty similar, actually. The first day is always really busy because people are anxious to get in there and get donating, get the stuff out of their garage and get shopping. We'll see a little bit of a lull. And then as we get closer to the end of the month in the next few days, it'll pick up again.
We're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be back and talk with Tom and Jennifer in just a minute.
Anything dirty or dingy or dusty, anything ragged or rotten or rusty, yes, I love trash. If you really want to see something trashy, look at this. I have here a sneaker that's battered and worn. It's all full of holes and the laces are torn. A gift from my mother the day I was born. I love it because it's trash. Oh, I love trash. Anything dirty or dingy or dusty, anything ragged or rotten or rusty, yes, I love trash. It's a more rotten stuff. I have here some newspaper 13 months old.
Dean Borg, continuing the exchange, we're talking with Tom Haddon, director of the Curb It Recycling Program in Des Moines, and also with Jennifer Jordan, who coordinates Iowa City's recycling program, and right now they're rummaging in the ramp, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about that. Tom, how were you measuring success, and what's the goal? What are you trying? What would really make you happy within the next couple of years if you could attain it?
Well, we can measure success in tonnage. For one, it's gone from 23,300 tons to 26,300 tons. So we can quantify it. The other thing we're going to measure is participation. So what we'd like to see is continual increase in participation and the tonnage that we receive in the Curb It program. And then we should see a correspondingly a reduction in our residential garbage.
Mm-hmm. And what's the incentive to people who no longer have use for certain items to do this program? What's the incentive? What's in it for
them? I think people just want to do the right thing. They have to pay for the collection service. It's not a big amount, but the other one was we'd like to tie in with community, start tying in reducing garbage fees if you recycle more, so you use a smaller container for your garbage. That way it incents you to recycle more. So that's one thing that communities aren't quite as they're a little reluctant to go to an aggressive system like that, because people like to throw things away easily and conveniently, and they don't want to have the hassle.
And Jennifer here is nodding all those things that you're saying about incentive. What's incentive in Iowa City to bring things to the ramp?
There's actually a couple of them specifically for Rummage in the Ramp. The first one is if you bring a donation in, all the groups that run the event are nonprofit groups, and it's also, of course, sponsored by the city, so they get a tax write-off. The other incentive is not to have to pay for it. If they leave it on the curb or leave it in their dumpster, they're possibly going to see an increase in rent the following year to cover some of those dumpster costs. They can also see, you know, a charge from the city to pick it up on the curb.
Do you have to reject some things?
We occasionally reject some things. It's been pretty minor. Most people bring us stuff that is in good, usable condition, mm-hmm. And people are very conscientious about that.
Before we take a caller here who wanted to ask about lithium batteries, and I'll take that call in just a second, who are the buyers? Who comes by to buy what somebody else doesn't want?
It's really a little bit of everybody in Iowa City. We see students. We see young families with little kids who are just starting to make their home and looking for, the ability to come buy a bunch of clothes for $10 or a new piece of furniture for $10. Most of the items are priced $20 or under, so it's very affordable. We really see the full spectrum of Iowa City residents.
And do you go from furniture to clothing? Is that?
Furniture, clothing, books, household items. We see a lot of kitchen stuff.
Electronics?
Some electronics, some appliances, a little bit of everything.
I said we were going to take a call, and that's from Joan in Fairfield. Go ahead, Joan.
Hi, for the lady that wonders what to do with her throwaway batteries, the small batteries. The older NiCad batteries that you would recharge, you know, they would last for about 10 minutes and you need to recharge them again. But there's a newer thing called a nickel metal hydride battery that I'm finding lasts almost as long as an alkaline battery. And you just keep recharging it. Then you don't have to worry about throwing it away.
Thanks for that tip, Joan. Thanks for calling from Fairfield. Thank you. Back to Jennifer here. What happens to the items that you don't sell? I mean, then you've got the problem.
Yes, and that the first year it was a bit of a problem because it got to the end of the event and we kind of looked around and everyone was gone and there were literally tons of things left. So we've had a much better plan the last couple of years. The first kind of flush of getting rid of some of the leftovers is that the volunteer groups who've put so much time and energy into this can pretty much come and take whatever they want in the last few hours of the sale. Mm-hmm. We get stuff to Furniture Project to restore here in Iowa City, Goodwill, Crowded Closet. We take any food that's come in throughout the event, we take that to either the shelter house or the crisis center. Animal shelter gets bedding. Some of the items actually get recycled. If it's a metal desk and we can dismantle it enough to recycle the metal aspect of it, we'll recycle that. The e-waste and appliances all get recycled through the landfill. There is still a little bit inevitably that has to go to the landfill. Last year it was about a ton out of about 25 tons. So
wow.
We really do our best to not take it to the landfill and try all the alternatives before that point.
Tom, is a call coming your way. I think it's from Des Moines. John in Des Moines has a call about plastic. John, go ahead.
Yes, I remember when we used to reuse pop bottles and milk bottles. The gallon milk bottles got a quarter deposit back in the 60s when I was a teenager. And I'm just thinking that business should bear the brunt of all this garbage that's going out there. By using plastics, we're putting things in the earth that lasts for thousands of years, and
I think you're
don't
singing,
break down.
I think you're singing off the same page as our guests here, and our guests who will be up in the second part of this hour. But Tom, you have a comment on that?
Well, 70 to 75% of the waste is produced by the commercial industrial side of the equation, which we don't have. Residentially, cities can they usually require their residents to recycle and do things, but the other is all voluntary basis, and he brings up some excellent points on sustainability and product stewardship.
Thank you, John.
Well, we could take that a step further and put deposits on batteries. I mean, they do on car batteries. You pay a charge for a car battery when you buy one and then exchange it for when you get the new battery, et cetera, et cetera. That could work down to all these little alkaline batteries we use on a daily basis.
But Tom, I think the point there is, would that be a locality that makes rules and regulations like John is suggesting, or is it the Iowa legislature?
You know, the state would have to step in, and then when you do that, you get instant pushback by industry saying, hey, you can't just do this by the state of Iowa and make us an island. That's one of the big arguments in the bottle bill. You have to almost look at nationally. I think the answer is nationally. Then you can't have the arguments that, oh, the people in Davenport are going to be put at a disadvantage because in Illinois they can just go over there. Maybe it's time for us to be moving in this direction nationally for some of these measures, I would think.
I want to go back to rummage the ramp here with Jennifer just a moment. Does revenue, Jennifer, from selling these items at all offset the cost of what you have to go through in administering it?
It does. And if the city kept the revenue, we would probably come out about 4 to 5 times ahead of what we spend. The expenditures for rummage the ramp, by far the most significant one is staff time, planning, and then being at the ramp, organizing, and keeping people going. That's probably several thousand dollars that we get T-shirts for the volunteers, and then there's also some printing costs. But the revenue that we saw last year was around $13,000-$14,000, so it's really significant. That money actually gets split among the volunteer groups who volunteer at the ramp. So last year, for instance, each one got a check for $575 for their four hours of work.
I might ask you, Tom, you want to do something like that in Des Moines, or is it just work in a college town?
Well, no, I think there's aspects. We work closely with Habitat for Humanity, Goodwill, there's Salvation Army. So there's a lot of those in place, but we are eyes open to new ideas. We're doing kind of a last chance recycling at the landfill itself, where when people come up, and especially in the pickups and things, we're going to give more chances for them to put things in recycling before they put them away, so we're burying them, like metal and things that are easily recyclable, cardboard and others. So, yeah, we're eyes open ideas. I know Jennifer has a lot of good ones.
Thanks, Tom.
And I know I asked Jennifer about the revenue. Does revenue at all offset the cost of what you're doing?
On the Kerbert Recycling Program, we do get revenue back from that. And what we're doing, using with the revenue now, is paying for the new containers, the new the rolling containers that we provided residents, which were about $50 each. So that was over a $3 million expenditure. So that the revenue is going there now. And then when we get those paid off, what we do is give the money back to the communities, which they use in some various environmental improvements or improving recycling programs and other items. So there is a revenue stream that's coming back.
Thank you, Tom. We've been talking with Tom Haddon, who is a director of the Kerbet Recycling Program for the Des Moines Metro Waste Authority, and with Jennifer Jordan, who coordinates Iowa City's recycling program, and program that they have going right now is Rummage in the Ramp. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're going to continue the talk about recycling in the coming hour, talking with some people from across Iowa. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio.
Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Well, if you're going to the market to buy some juice, you got to bring your own bags and you learn to reduce your waste. We got to learn to reduce. If your brother or your sister's got some cool clothes, you could try them on before you buy some more of those. Reuse. Yeah. We gotta learn to reuse. Yeah. And if the first 2 hours don't work out, and if you gotta make some trash, well, don't throw it out. Recycle, yeah, baby. Recycle, come on. We gotta learn to reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Dean Borg continuing the exchange now from Iowa Public Radio, and we are going to be talking with Leslie Goldsmith, the Department of Natural Resources. She's a land quality program planner there, and also with Wendy Whitlock, who's the operations manager for the Cass County Landfill. Leslie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And Wendy, good afternoon to you. I'm not hearing from Wendy, and I'm sure that she will be along on the line. Oh, there she is.
I'm on.
Hey, nice to hear your voice. Leslie, you work for the Department of Natural Resources. Give us an overview of how Iowa communities are doing in solid waste management? And are there communities that are doing a better job than some others? I know they're under legal laws that have been passed concerning how much they have to reduce what they're sending to the landfill each year. But other than that, give us an overview of how things are going in Iowa.
Well, there's a couple different ways you can look at it. Iowa set goals back in the early 90s. They wanted 25% reduction in waste being sent to Iowa's landfills by 1994, and then a 50% reduction by July 1 of 2000. And we have a couple landfills, solid waste planning areas, that are above 50%, and there's roughly 10 that are above the state average of 36%. And then maybe,
what's the penalty for that?
The penalty is every landfill, every permitted solid waste facility pays a fee for every ton that comes into their facility that gets landfilled. And the ones that have a lower percentage, they have to pay a higher fee.
I see. Are there geographic topography factors that affect, though, how a community can dispose of its trash?
Yes. There are solid waste planning areas, and in Iowa we have flow control. So everyone in a certain planning area has to send their garbage to that landfill or transfer station.
Wendy, I want to bring you into the conversation here because I know that the DNR, and maybe we should have Leslie explain it first, you have some pilot projects going on in Iowa. Cass County is one of them. Now, give us an idea of what the pilot project initiative is.
As Leslie had explained, we were all under legislation to meet certain goals across the state of Iowa for waste reduction. The past formula that was used to meet those goals, it was kind of declared that maybe wasn't reflecting all the different things that the different planning areas were doing. And I guess in Cass County's cases, we were providing more and more programs and more options available for recycling and waste abatement or the reduction of waste, but it wasn't reflecting on our goal progress to the state. So being one of the pilot projects now, we're being able to be judged on the programs that we're offering and not necessarily on the waste that's being landfilled
in our
location.
So that's the difference. You're judged on different criteria then. And you went to something that's very unique in Iowa. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, back in around the year 2000, we purchased the landfill our environmental agency did back in 1992. And in the late 1990s, we decided we needed to kind of, at a crossroads, needed to update our operations, do something. So we did a lot of research in the neighboring states on a bale fill operation. And we kind of took the good and the bad from the information that we had put together and put together what is still a unique operation in Iowa as a bale fill operation, where all of our household waste and some of our small construction demolition waste is baled and compacted prior to being landfilled at our site.
And what's the advantage of that?
Well, we have control of all the waste. We're able to monitor maybe a little bit better on it. One of the big factors we see is we've all but eliminated the litter present at a landfill. And as we all know, you know, any landfill, when the wind blows, where the litter goes, and the neighbors sure appreciate that we're operating in a different fashion there. We also have a lot smaller working face because we're stacking 2,000-pound bales as opposed to having to lay them out in lifts and having loose litter to have to cover so much with soil.
Leslie, I'm going to go back to you on this. I know that baling is an option, as is incineration in some areas, and landfill with a liner and all sorts of other options. But with what they're doing in baling, you know, with a big bale like that put into a landfill, does that impede the decomposition of what is covered?
Well, you're getting outside my area there. That is that goes over on the permitting side, and so I'd rather talk about the stuff that doesn't go into the landfill and get back to the goals and those types of things. I have seen the bale fill, though, and one thing that it does do is it gets them a better compaction rate, so it takes up a lot less air space, and which saves them money when they go to build their cells, which is really expensive these days because they all do have to be lined.
Back to this pilot environmental management system, then, what are the other areas in Iowa? Who are the other pilot sites?
Well, there's six sites. There's Dubuque, Cedar Rapids, Linn County. Then there's Scott County and Metro Waste Authority, who you just talked to, Tom Haddon, and Rathbun and Cass County.
And
so we wanted to get a wide variety. Metro Waste Authority is the largest landfill, and then we also got some of the smaller ones, smaller rural landfills in Rathbun and Cass County, and then some mid-sized ones. So we wanted to get an idea of how this would work for all different types of landfills.
Yes.
And what we were finding with the goal progress system that we have been using since the early 90s was that there were some challenges with that methodology just because the 1988 baseline, what we did was compared the garbage that's going into landfills today compared to what was going into landfills in 1988. And that doesn't always capture, you know, what types of things are being done around the state to say if they opened up a household hazardous waste facility, that might just take out a few tons out of the waste stream, but those might be the most toxic tons. And so they really didn't get credit for good programs like that.
And this is giving them credit. And do you think that what you're doing here in this pilot program might be applied to others throughout the state, depending upon how this pilot results come out?
Right. What we're hoping to do is then open this up after this pilot year is over and then have other planning areas be able to apply to be an EMS and then go from there.
Now, Wendy, this is a question that's come in here by email from a listener in Humboldt, and I'll just do your guests, this listener asks, have any tips for keeping rodents away? Is that a problem in landfills, Wendy?
Well, I'm sure it is to some degree. I don't experience a lot of it. We're a pretty small landfill, so we have a very small active and open face that we're working off of, and we cover on a daily basis as is required by current rules. Most of our waste comes inside of a building. We do extensive cleanup at the end of every day. There's going to be rodents and birds at any site, but we have minimized that greatly in our operations, as I think every landfill across the state tries to do the best they can to minimize that.
Thank you, and thanks for that email. I might just mention, if you do have a question for our guest, you can email it to theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Or if you have a question and you'd like to speak in person, then dial 1-866-780-9100. So two ways to contact us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org or 1-866-780-9100. Leslie, you had mentioned that this environmental management system, is it more costly than what is generally being done in landfills across the state, these pilot programs?
You know, I think Wendy, you mean costly for the people that
yes.
are, I guess Wendy would probably be a better person to answer that. We did the legislation that was passed to try the pilot did include some funding that came from it comes from the tipping fee that is part of that tonnage fee for
yes.
every ton of garbage that gets landfilled in Iowa, and it was carved out of the Solid Waste Alternatives Program fund, so it wasn't any new funds, and so the people that are participating in the pilot program were able to take advantage of some grant funding. And so we've tried to help offset some of the costs, but what do you think, Wendy? Has it cost you additional funds?
I think maybe slightly, but not significant. We have, as I said, all along experienced or put more and more programs into effect. I think the one big thing that I'm getting out of the EMS as we're putting it together is the documentation of all of these programs that we're doing so that we can reflect the outcome of a certain program that's put into effect. As Leslie stated, grant funds were available to us, and as a small planning area, that was a huge positive for us to be able to have a little bit of seed money to start a few projects and programs that maybe we wouldn't have been able to get off the ground right now. Not necessarily saying we wouldn't have done them in the future. It's just the funding was available now to be able to get the start on it.
We're going to take a caller here in just a moment, but since you mentioned tipping fees, Leslie, I wanted to go into that. Tipping fees are the fee that a truck pays in order to come in and dump trash. Isn't that right? That's revenue for the landfill.
Well, yes. The tipping fee is the amount per ton that a customer of the landfill pays.
Yes.
And then a certain portion of that is a tonnage fee that comes into the state, and it's paid to run our programs, the Department of Natural Resources programs like permitting, and then there is the grant program, and there are some other programs that are funded through the tonnage fee.
But if you take that thought just a bit further, recycling actually reduces the tipping fees and the revenue to a landfill, doesn't it?
That is the catch-22 of it all.
And it has a harsh effect on a lot of us.
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Well, in our case, we are just tipping fee related. We have no per capita monies or no tax monies as part of our planning area. So, as Leslie said, it's a catch-22. We're promoting all the time continued recycling, continued growth and development in other programs, and at the same time, we're reducing the waste that's coming into the landfill. That reduction in waste is a huge reduction in our revenues, and that's what we operate off of.
Yes, and that gets to another question that we may get to later on in our discussion, and that is garbage and trash collection and disposal is big business. In fact, out-of-state landfills actually compete for tipping fees, if you will. And we'll get to that discussion in just a moment. Dave is calling from Cascade. Dave, go ahead.
Hi, I'm just throwing a comment on basically on styrofoam, and that it's a massive amount of volume. Estimates are up to 30%. That's one of the highest estimates of landfill volume. But because of the low weight and our method of describing garbage in tonnage, it's really unaccounted for, and there seems to be no drive to recycle it, even though it's recyclable.
Wendy, is that a question you'd like to tackle?
Well, it's different areas are able to recycle that. Some of the metro areas may have a market. In my situation, I'm only able to accept materials for recycling that I can find a feasible market to get rid of them. I agree it's a huge quantity with less weight, but it takes an awful lot of material to make it feasible to set up a market and process that material to be able to ship to market at a cost that you can afford. So I think that's something that'll be coming around. We found with the recycling business back in the early 1990s when legislation came down that we needed to do recycling, the markets weren't available. They've come around, they've fallen, they've come around again. We continue to have to work with that as the highs and lows of those go. But I think in time more markets will be developed and more of us in the planning areas will be able to help channel those materials where they need to go.
Dave, thanks for your call from Cascade. I'm going to Carl now in Palo. Carl?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. You?
Doing okay. Great program. Say I got a question, you know, just one example. Let's say, for instance, if the packagers reduce packaging, they're going to lose jobs. And on the other hand, they make a lot of waste by, packaging the cereal boxes and everything double, and you know how it is.
Yes.
So how do we get out of that cycle, like, you know, competition for jobs and reducing our, our business?
Well, I think that's the thing that keeps Leslie and Wendy awake at night, and we'll get an answer from them.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Leslie.
Well, one thing that I think can happen is that the people that are into production may turn around and maybe there's jobs in repairing things like there used to be and more green jobs. So it's just a shift but I'm not an expert in those areas. I just think there needs to be a way to shift into goods that are more durable.
And Wendy, I'm going to ask you a question here about large items. We are talking things, I think, that people think they can put out into a box and on the front yard and it's picked up. But what about large appliances and things like that? Isn't it cheaper to recycle them than it is to throw them away?
Well, in some cases, and it depends on the planning area or the place area across the state you're working in, appliances in my area have to be recycled. We will not accept them as a waste item. So in some planning areas, they're banned from disposal. We try to provide a drop-off location to be able to take those materials, and obviously they have to be sent off to be recycled so that all the components can be dealt with. Mm-hmm. That costs us, so we have to pass the cost along to the customer.
And what is a cost for, say, getting rid of a dryer or washing machine?
Our current cost that we charge in Cass County is $15 per appliance.
And do you get that back in recycling it?
We have to send it in, and that covers the fees associated with sending it in to have it to a processing facility to have it recycled.
Okay.
So it covers our costs. You know, we're not generating any revenue off of that, basically. We're just trying to provide a good location to recycle it.
Here comes a question about plastic bags from Mickey in Des Moines. Mickey, what is it?
Hi. I just wondered, what's the rationale behind not using plastic bags from the grocery store, which in the past I have used to line my trash cans at home, but then you go buy a bag of plastic bags to line your trash cans? It seems sort of counterproductive.
What do you say about that, Leslie Goldsmith from the DNR?
I don't know who's telling you not to use your plastic bag. I know they don't want the plastic bags in the recycling bins, because that does gum up the works when it comes to the recycling equipment that they have automatic sorters and it spins into the wheels and gums things up. But as, when it comes to the landfill, as long as there's something in it, that's not a problem. But I used to run a landfill, and as Wendy said, those things turn into kites, and I've seen them where they didn't even hit the ground, and I got to go out and pick them up. So just throwing plastic bags into the garbage is an environmental mess.
I think that answers your question, Mickey. Thanks for calling.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Are you actively trying to get out of the landfill business, though, Leslie? Do you think that, you know, as we look down the future, what is the future for disposing of trash in Iowa?
I think right now, this is my own personal opinion, that landfills are still the most cost-effective, best way to dispose of trash in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And there may be in the next 10 years better ways, but so far I ran a landfill down in Creston, and we looked at all the options because our landfill closed, and we couldn't come up with anything else besides a transfer station because there just weren't any other good options for, you know, if there's cost involved in waste to energy. And, you know, they talk about turning garbage into fuel and things like that, but it all has a fee.
Yes, so. But if you look at Linn County tried for years to re-site a landfill, finally went back and angered the city of Marion by enlarging the landfill that was adjacent to the city of Marion, the existing landfill. What I am getting at is we're running out of land or acceptable sites.
Well, they say that, and in certain areas they might be. I'm getting a low battery beep, so I might lose you.
Okay.
I think I'll have to call you back on another phone.
Oh, okay. Well, we may say goodbye, Leslie, because we're near the end of the program. Thanks for being with us, and thank you.
Appreciate it.
I've got to take Gene on the phone. He's driving. Gene, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that my wife and I are quite avid recyclers, and one thing I find out for sure is that your local auto salvage places will take scrap metal for free.
Okay. Thanks for that tip, and we appreciate that very much. Well, we've been talking with Leslie Goldsmith from the Department of Natural Resources and Wendy Whitlock, the operations manager at the Cass County Landfill. Today's program, produced by Lindsay Moon and Alex Hoyer, with assistance from Rosalind Sixby. Technical support today from Dennis Reese and Sarah McCammon in Des Moines. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. We always welcome your comments and questions about the program. Contact us anytime at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. The Exchange is produced by Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dean Borg. Thanks for being with us today.